You are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Up next, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. This was That's Controversy by Prince. For those of you that do not know it, I thought it'd be appropriate during these particular times. Welcome. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial. This is, and for the next hour, it will be Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I'm your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you so much for listening. The opinions expressed here are only mine and my guests and nobody else's, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But I wanted to dive right in. I'm very excited about this show. I was looking at The Advocate and ran across an article called How to Win LGBTQ Equality in the South. The article was written by the Reverend Jasmine Beach Ferreira, and she's the executive director of an organization called the Campaign for Southern Equality. And this is a nonprofit that works around the South promoting LGBTQ protections. So I am excited about having a couple of the people that work with the Campaign for Southern Equality come on the show to talk a little bit about what's going on with various laws around the South. One in particular, this is a bit of good news. I believe it was last month, it was the passage of non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ individuals in Virginia, including trans community. The new law goes into effect July 1st, and this will make Virginia the first state in the South to have such sweeping laws protecting LGBTQ members of society. So I think that that's really cool, and I'm very excited about it. I'm very excited about having the people from the Campaign for Southern Equality on the show. But before we go there and talk anything more about that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh no, she didn't say what.
So let's see, where do I want to go? We'll start with Georgia's statewide LGBTQ rights groups signed an open letter with more than 130 other groups across the country committing to end racism and white supremacy and make it integral to their missions for full equality of LGBTQ people. We understand what it means to rise up and push back against a culture that tells us we are less than, that lives don't matter, the letter states. Today, we join again to say Black Lives Matter and commit ourselves to the actions that those words require. So this is Georgia's statewide LGBTQ rights group, which is Georgia Equality. They signed this petition. So I think that that's wonderful, or this letter, I should say. We're queer. A lot of us are Black. A lot of us aren't Black. But we all know what it's like to feel discriminated against. And I think we have a responsibility as LGBTQ members of society to come to the aid and the support of other oppressed groups. And so I'm glad that's happening. All right. Here's another bit of good news. A gay couple is seen getting intimate in a new advertisement on Polish TV. So this is in Poland. And this is believed to be the first time the country has seen same-sex couples together in a commercial, which you can watch it on YouTube. But the advertisement is for Durex condoms. And it comes after a year when about a third of Poland has set up LGBTQ-free zones. So this is a country that has not been very nice towards the queer community over the last year. The advertisement features well-known YouTubers Jacob and David Majczek-Kojinczynski. I'm sure I blew that name out of the water. And they are a gay couple that are famous for their LGBTQ plus around Poland. And so the couple has described this new commercial as a historic moment in Polish TV. And the advertisement for Durex's Loud in Bed campaign shows three couples starting to get intimate. One of them is straight, but one of them is gay, Jacob and Dawid. And they appear to be giving each other a quarantine haircut before they get frisky. So I think that's really exciting, and I'm glad to see that. All right, and then we'll end with this not-so-happy note. In a fundraising email to supporters, Brian Brown, who is president of the National Organization for Marriage, now you know this isn't going to be good, which is the, I guess it's NOM, N-O-M, has touted President Donald Trump's rolling back of LGBT victories under former President Barack Obama. For over a decade, the National Organization for Marriage has been at the forefront of denying gay and lesbian couples the right to marry. After the Supreme Court in 2015 struck down state laws and constitutional amendments prohibiting such unions, the National Organization for Marriage expanded its anti-LGBTQ advocacy beyond the single issue of opposing same-sex marriage. So now they're just pushing against all things gay. While pride parades and festivals have been canceled due to coronavirus pandemics, or the coronavirus pandemic, organizers are planning virtual pride celebrations throughout June. So that's good, but nevertheless, it's Pride Month, and we have an email from Brown asking for money and applauding the Trump administration's rollback of gains made under the Obama administration, a possible reference to transgender rights, including open military service and LGBTQ workplace discriminations. So the Equality Act is stalled right now. It's a federal law that was passed last year in Congress, but the Senate with McConnell is loath to pick it up and move on it. Of course, Trump also ended transgenders in the military, so apparently this organization is real happy about that and is trying to get money in the name of Donald Trump and his rollback of rights for LGBTQ, which I think is just really sad and awful and typical. And so with that, I do want to say one more thing before we head to break and get back with our guests. And I'm just going to say this again. Listen, I know that many of you listening to this radio station, WRFG Atlanta, this is a fairly progressive radio station, and there are many people that listen to this station that are fairly left-leaning, fairly liberal, and are not interested in a moderate Democrat running for president. They want somebody like Bernie Sanders. And I have heard people associated with the station, listeners, say, well, you know, I refuse to vote for Joe Biden. And I just want to make a plea to you to please reconsider this and get to the polls in November and vote for Joe Biden. I don't care that he's not your first, second, third, fourth, or even 10th choice. He's better than the person that we have in office now. We must get this man out of office Donald Trump. He is literally tearing this country apart. If Donald Trump remains in office another 4 years, he has a high likelihood of being able to put yet another very conservative person on the Supreme Court, as I doubt Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be willing to hang around another 4 years. And so I am begging you to suck it up and get down to the polls in November and vote for Joe Biden and bring whoever it is that you can gather up with you. We have got to get it together. We cannot sit something out like a number of you did in 2016 because you were like, well, I don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, so I'm just not going to vote. Well, that's because in the very back of your mind, you probably figured that she was going to win, so you didn't need to protect yourself from the likes of Donald Trump. Well, look what happened. All right. So let's try and get it together this time. I remember the Jill Stein voters that didn't vote for Hillary, and they wrote in Jill Stein because they just could not stand, or voted for Jill Stein because they were very concerned about the environment and they didn't think that Hillary Clinton was strong enough on environmental issues. And so they voted for Jill Stein, and look what happened. If the Jill Stein voters had voted for Hillary Clinton, we would not have Donald Trump in the White House. And look what happened as he rolled back all kinds and is still rolling back all kinds of protections for the environment and has basically gutted the EPA. So I guess that's the end of my little speech. But having said that, I guess we will be back in a moment. But please do what I say, okay? I know from which I speak. Everything I say is right, remember? We'll be right back.
Let's dance in style, let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait, we're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young, or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a short trip. The music's for the sad man. Can you imagine when this race is won?
The risk from infection from COVID-19 is very real, especially in crowded spaces where it's hard to practice social distancing. Health officials say the coronavirus can be spread just by speaking, coughing, or sneezing. That's why I wear a cloth mask over my mouth and nose when I'm in public. I wear it to protect you, just in case I have the virus and don't know it. We've posted a short video on how to make your own cloth mask on the coronavirus page at wrfg.org. In Atlanta, we're 89.3 FM. Your independent community radio station is streaming worldwide over our free mobile app and wrfg.org.
Obvious song to do when you are doing a queer radio show, which kind of makes me sick in a little in a certain way. But anyway, we won't worry about that. Welcome to all of you that are listening. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial. This is Atlanta's only queer radio station devoted exclusively. Oh, it's not a queer radio station. It's the Atlanta's only queer radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting the gay community. I am your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you oh so much for listening. And before we go any further, I must say what I always say, which is that the opinions expressed here are only those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of the employees of the radio station or the board or the funders or the donors or even you, the listeners. They are only the opinions of myself and my guest. But of course, as I've said before, I always know everything and everything I say is correct. So therefore, there's no need to be concerned about it. So let's move on to our topic for tonight's show. And by the way, I will just say very quickly that we are basically, what is this, June the 9th and of 2020. We're still in the land of COVID. And in Georgia here, the numbers are basically stable. From what I can tell, I check every day. It's kind of hard to see what the stats are like because they keep changing the way that you can see them online. I think the government's playing tricks on us. But we seem to be averaging around 500 to 800 new cases every single day, and it's not going down. So anyway, that's kind of where we're at this point. So, all right, tonight's show. So in April of this year, an article appeared in The Advocate, which I came across, and the article was called How to Win LGBTQ Equality in the South, which, I mean, that's difficult, all right? Growing up here in Atlanta, I know that it's difficult, and Atlanta is kind of a liberal bastion in a sea of red, but the article was written by Reverend Jasmine Beach Ferrara, who is the executive director of an organization I didn't know about called the Campaign for Southern Equality. Campaign for Southern Equality has been around since 2011, and the campaign works around the South promoting LGBTQ protections. Among other things, this article, which again came out in The Advocate a couple months ago, the article highlighted the recent passage of a non-discrimination bill in Virginia, of all states, for LGBTQ individuals, and that includes the trans community. The new law goes into effect, I believe, July 1st, and you will correct me, my guests will correct me if I'm wrong, but it goes into effect July 1st and will make Virginia the first state in the South to have such a law on the books that promotes or provides protections for the LGBTQ community in the workplace as well as in other places. Now, Reverend Jasmine couldn't be with us today, but that is okay. But we have the people that are doing a lot of the work on the ground. These are two members of their team. One of them is Ivy Hill. Ivy is the organization's community health program director. Say hello, Ivy. I want to make sure that everybody can hear you.
Hey, I'm Ivy, the Community Health Program Director with the Campaign for Southern Equality, and I also use they, them pronouns.
Yes, yes, I was going to get to that. So she, look, did you see how I already did this? They use they, them, and theirs, and I apologize in advance if I screw that up. You know, I'm a gay man, but that doesn't mean anything when it comes to gender identity. You know what I'm saying? There are plenty of gay people screw that up. And as a matter of fact, I'd love to talk about members of the traditionally gay community that have issues being lumped in with the trans community, which I think is just maddening. But anyway, all right. So, and I will brag on you for a second, Ivy. Ivy was born in Piedmont, South Carolina. They currently live there. Here we go. Ivy is the co-founder and executive director of the award-winning trans advocacy and support group Gender Benders, based in upstate South Carolina. And I have heard of that group, Gender Benders, by the way. So that's pretty cool. Congratulations to you, Ivy. And then with Ivy is Allison Scott. Allison is the director of policy and programs at the organization Southern Campaign for Southern Equality. And as part of her advocacy work, she has developed and led numerous trainings for local organizations, including medical practices, schools, churches, businesses, and has established name change clinics for trans people, conducted support groups, participated in panel discussions, interviews, and coordinated with local school systems. Say hello, Allison, to everyone.
Hello, Allison Scott here.
All right. And Allison, I'll brag on you too for a second. Allison was chosen by USA Today to be one of the 50 faces of Pride for North Carolina. Allison identifies as a trans woman and uses she and her pronouns. So I didn't say, Ivy, would you consider, do you consider yourself, I don't know how you identify, or maybe you don't identify as terms of use they and them, but would I say you're gay? What do I say? Or nothing?
I identify as genderqueer.
Genderqueer. All right. Mm-hmm. Cool. Which is different from binary, I would imagine. Binary has to do with gender identity. Well, actually, why don't you tell me what you mean by genderqueer? That's a good question.
That is a good question. And we actually provide trainings on this that are 60 to 90 minutes to really dive into this stuff. But a lot of folks see, I guess I would say the majority of society sees gender as a binary system.
Right.
There's two options. You're either a man or a woman. And I reject that ideology. I think there's actually many more options there. So non-binary is an umbrella term that encompasses a lot of those folks who don't identify with either. And for me, so identity is deeply personal, and so it means different things to different people, right? But for me, genderqueer is one of those identities that falls under the non-binary umbrella there.
How does it relate to non-binary? How is that more specific than just traditionally non-binary? Or is it not? Is it just a term you like better?
It's a term that I like better. And I think we can get into, trouble when we try to really narrowly define terms like that. And so what I really say to folks is that's not the part I want you to get hung up on. The part I want you to get hung up on is respecting people. And if that's what we all get hung up on, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, no, I think that's well said. All right. So let's move on. So the article, I wanted to start with the article in The Advocate and something in particular, and then I think this will be kind of a jumping off point. But in the article in The Advocate that, again, was written in April of this year by your executive director, Jasmine Beach Ferreira. She is Reverend Jasmine Beach Ferreira. But anyway, the article is titled How to Win LGBTQ Equality in the South. And in it, Jasmine talks about how the South demands a multi-pronged strategy as it relates to gaining LGBTQ protections. And I wondered what that meant, what she meant by that, and how your organization might be working to make that happen. And I guess, I don't know whether, I think I'll throw this at you, Allison, if you feel comfortable answering it.
Yeah, and I think Ivy and I are really comfortable, so we'll probably just bounce back and forth organically as we go through the conversation.
Okay.
Really, we see the strategy of winning LGBTQ equality based around the fact that we not only need legal equality, but we also need lived equality. And sometimes those things intersect, and sometimes those are on two different paths. Obviously with legal equality, you tend to get into laws and policies and all the rules that govern our society. But with lived equality, we're talking about the things that people feel virtually daily in their lives, such as healthcare, such as employment, the way you're treated, the way you move about in society, and the way society treats you. Without lived equality, legal equality would only be half the battle.
Yeah, yes, and somewhat meaningless in a way. Definitely. What do you have to say about it, Ivy? Because I know that speaking of lived equality, that's kind of part and parcel of some of the work that you're doing as being the community health director.
Yeah, well, I mean, I definitely would echo everything that Allison just said. I think when I think about lived equality, one of the things that really comes to my mind is just the freedom to move through public space with safety. And when I think about that, and I think about Pride Month right now, I think about everything that's happening with the Black Lives Matter protests and all of that, I think that these things are really inextricably bound to each other. And that's the main thing that comes to my mind when I think about lived equality is just the safety to move through public space.
But I think what you're saying, it's not necessarily totally related to legislative equality. There's other aspects to it.
I mean, there's I think both are definitely important and both are definitely needed. We need structural change. We need policy change. And also, it doesn't matter what the law says. If when my folks go out on the street, they're going to get beat up or have to fear for their lives. There's not a law that's going to change that. That's a cultural shift that we have to do. And I think that's part of what lived equality is really about.
Yeah, and it's going to take some time. You know, it's interesting how in 2015, when all of a sudden marriage equality, we attained marriage equality, which, I mean, I don't think any of us thought would happen. Sir, I didn't think it would happen in my lifetime. But at that moment, you know, somehow there was this idea, particularly in the straight, you know, community that, oh, well, you know, it's all done now. Like, we have all of the rights that we need, you know, and it's like, no, that's actually not true. There's, I don't know how many states are there now where you can be fired for being gay or transgender. I think it's 20 or 18.
Yeah, it's a sizable amount. The fact that you can be fired in even one state is atrocious.
Right.
You know, and that's where we get back into this combination effort of lived and legal equality. And, you know, we actually know a lot about marriage equality at CSC. In 2011, we started out fighting Amendment 1 in North Carolina, and we were the organization that defeated that in North Carolina Supreme Court. And one of our lawyers went on to argue in front of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, for all of the United States. So, yeah, you know, when you talk about defeating stuff, it's a multi-pronged approach, and you have to work on a lot of different things at the same time.
So, yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because so I noticed that your organization began in 2011. How did that was in particular around that marriage equality fight in North Carolina? Is that how the organization began?
You mind if I jump in real quick?
Yeah, whoever.
I was wanting you to.
I would say from the jump, it has been advocating for both legal and lived equality has been a central part of our values and mission organizationally. But at the beginning, when we started in 2011, Jasmine, our executive director, saw an opportunity to move the needle in the South. And people looked at her like there was something wrong with her. Folks at all different kinds of organizations told her, there's no way you can do that here, not in the South. You can't run actions here. You can't have same-sex couples go and apply for marriage licenses. And what is that going to change? And what good is that going to do? There's no way. But we kept pushing and kept doing it anyway with her leadership. And so that's what we did from about 2011 to 2015. There was a heavy focus on marriage equality work. But even in that time, the Campaign for Southern Equality taught us at Gender Vendors how to do name change clinics for folks. And so even during that time, when a lot of the public-facing focus of our work was marriage equality, there was still a lot of back-end work happening around community building and trans advocacy and health advocacy for queer people in the South too.
So I want to go back and just touch on it again, because I understand it started in the basement. The organization started in the basement of a church, I believe. Is that so? You said that she saw an opportunity to change to move the needle in North Carolina in 2011. And I'm kind of surprised. Was that an opportunity that she just saw while sleeping? Was she dreaming, or was there something going on that she felt like there was an opportunity?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that we're still in that church basement.
Really?
We're really proud of that fact. Yes, we are. We are very proud of that. We've got a slightly bigger room now, but we are still in the same place we started, and we've expanded and have an office in Greenville, South Carolina, where Ivy is. We have 9 staff members across 4 states. So we're proud of our history, and we're also proud of where we're going. And I think sometimes people do see that public piece of marriage equality. And as Ivy was saying, you know, we were doing work all along on other fronts for queer and trans, non-binary people across in our community. But sometimes, you know, the flashy stuff is what gets the press, and people don't always see the other hard work you're doing. So we're really proud of that, and we are still doing it.
Yeah, talk a little bit, and Ivy, if you could, because I do want to get into some of the cases, but particularly Virginia, but before we get into that, could you just talk a little bit about what you do in your job and your position as the health community director. I hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah, the community health program director with CSD. We do a lot of things that range. So we've been doing this for a while now, but cover kind of a broad array of topics and stuff that we do. So a couple of the big things that we've done over the last few years, we published the 2018 Trans Health Focus Group Report and the report of the 2019 LGBTQ Southern Health Survey. So both of those were really big pieces of research that we did that I was a part of, taking a deeper look at the health experiences of trans and queer people in the South. You know, up until this point, we have had to extract data from national surveys like the U.S. The U.S. Trans help me, Allison, from the National
Center. Yeah, from the Williams. Yeah, and also the Williams Institute. We relied a lot on those.
And we know that when we're looking at national data, it's not telling a story about what life is actually like in the South. And so that's been a big part of our work over the last couple of years. I also do a lot of work to train up medical providers and trans sensitivity training. Over the last year, we were able to provide trainings for more than 1,000 medical providers, mostly in Western North Carolina and upstate South Carolina. And then we also do things like publish the Trans in the South Guide, which is a resource guide that folks can access that includes more than 400 medical and legal providers that are trans-friendly across 13 southern states. And then some of the other work that we do is more around community building, and we do that through pop-up clinics, where we work with local leaders who are on the ground to identify issues that they have in their community. And so some of those have been name and gender marker change clinics. Some of those have been self-defense clinics that are led by trans people for trans people. Sometimes that looks like clinics where we're connecting folks with immigration attorneys, and sort of a whole range of topics. But really, I think the important thing about the clinics is that they're led by the leaders on the ground. And then we work with them to say, we either have a model where we can do this already, or this looks like something where we could build a model and do a clinic to get those resources to folks. So
wow.
We do other things too. And I know that was a mouthful, but that's a
fair amount
of the work we do in our health program.
No, that's good, because I think it's important for people to know literally where the rubber meets the road. And it sounds like you are doing a lot of good work. Where would you get access to that list of providers? Is that something that's on your website? Because I know listeners might be interested in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go to southernequality.org, you'll find the Trans in the South Guide there. And Allison actually did a lot of work with us. So up until this most recent update, it's been in a PDF book format. And Allison did a lot of work to really change the way that works now. So there is a PDF that you can download, but there's also a heat map. So if you know where you live, you can look on the map and zoom in to where you are and see visually where there are holes, where there are not service providers, and where the closest providers to you are. We also do some vetting of those providers. So it lists like if they provide hormone replacement therapy, if they require a letter from a therapist, if they will write letters for name changes, if they'll see adolescents, if they take insurance, if they have more than a 6-month wait whenever I called and talked to somebody. So there's a lot of that sort of vetting and initial question asking stuff that we've already taken care of. For you, and you can find all that in the key in the beginning of the guide.
All right. And just that just got me curious. So what if I'm in need of these services and I have no money? Is that something that you can help me with if I don't have insurance and I don't have money?
So right now we are offering, not right now, but we have been offering rounds of emergency assistance grants through the Southern Equality Fund. We also have Needs and Dreams grants through the Southern Equality Fund that folks could apply for there. But there are icons also included where I ask those questions to the providers when I'm on the phone with them. So if they offer free services or if they charge on a sliding scale, you'll also see that marked with an icon there too. So you can specifically search out those providers as well.
Oh, wow. I have a gentleman on the show, I think it was last year, who's a doctor who specializes in the trans community, Dr. Joe Smitty. I don't know if you've heard of him before, but he was the first one in Atlanta, and he has hundreds in his practice. Joseph Smitty is his name, but he's amazing, and he does really good work. For those of you that are just joining us, you are listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. I'm your host, Greg Bossen, and I do want to just introduce for listeners that are just joining. We are speaking with Ivy Hill and Allison Scott, both of whom are with the Campaign for Southern Equality, an organization whose mission is to promote full LGBTQ equality across the South. So what I want to do is focus a little bit on the laws themselves and how much work that you perhaps are doing in that vein. So I understand there's obviously a federal law, and maybe that's a good place to start with, called the Equality Act, which was actually passed, I guess it passed the House, or is it still stuck in committee? Yeah, passed the House
in spring of 19.
Yeah, in 2019. The bill prohibits discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity in a wide variety of areas, including public accommodations and facilities, education, federal funding, employment, housing, credit, and the jury system. And let's see, there was a couple of things in here. The bill expands the definition of public accommodations to include places or establishments that provide exhibitions, recreation, exercise, amusement, gatherings, or displays, goods, services, or programs, that would be all businesses, and transportation services. It also allows the Department of Justice to intervene in equal protection actions in federal court on account of sexual orientation or gender identity. And that was the another thing that I wanted to say. It specifically prohibits an individual from being denied access to a shared facility, including a restroom, a locker room, or a dressing room that is in accordance with the individual's gender identity. And it also prohibits the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993 from providing a claim, defense, or basis for changing such protections. That's a big deal, because that in particular seems to be a major stumbling block in getting some of these protections in place, is these Religious Freedom Acts. I know there's one in Georgia that hasn't moved forward, but or maybe it failed. I can't remember, actually. But anyway, so tell me a little bit about what your work is as it relates to maybe the federal acts. I mean, are you involved with that? What is it that you do or have done? Or maybe that's not your focus.
Yeah, it's not. You know, we try to focus on the Southeast region. You know, we will sign on to amicus briefs or partner with any of the larger national organizations during different times and different actions when it makes sense. And of course, we always follow what's going on with those acts, because it directly affects the work that we're doing in individual states. But we don't typically get involved directly with any federal level laws that are in, and we don't have a driving force in the Equality Act.
Okay. I think it's stalled now in the Senate, and it'll probably remain stalled until we get a different president in office, as I imagine what would happen. Well, either that or get Mitch McConnell out of the Senate, which would be very nice. Does Kentucky count as the South? I never knew that. It does.
It's a pretty broad. It's a pretty broad definition of the South. A lot of people will define it different ways.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about something positive, and that's what happened in Virginia. So, I was reading about this. It's kind of trippy. So, just 3 years ago, in the state of Virginia, Virginia led the country in anti-LGBTQ legislation, passing four different laws targeting queer and transgender people from 2013 to 2017. Well, here we are in 2020, and Virginia Governor, Democrat, Ralph Northam signed a bill into law that would expand non-discrimination protections on public employment, housing, and credit on the basis of sexual orientation, gender, or race. The bill goes into effect July 1st, and I believe makes Virginia the very first Southern state to have such a law. Is that, am I right on that, guys?
Yeah, that's true. Virginia was the first. Virginia was the first state to pass an LGBTQ non-discrimination ordinance, a comprehensive one. So, well, again, that's what we talked about. We say moving the needle. Every victory in anything LGBTQ is moving that needle toward that eventual goal of lived and legal equality.
Yeah, I wonder how that happened. I mean, how was that? I don't know what happened in that state. I don't know if either of you can speak to that.
Well, people showed up and they voted out. It takes more. I think a lot of times, personally, I think people, if things are going well, you don't get involved and our lives are busy and more hectic than ever. And in Virginia, we saw it reached a tipping point where people showed up at the polls. They voted out more than just the governor. You know, they voted out their individual legislators to get a progressive legislative members in who could accomplish this. You can't do it with just a governor. You can't do it with just one, House or Senate. You have to have all of those things in. And in Virginia, we saw people show up at this poll and get people elected who would move this needle for full equality.
Yeah, I'm looking here. After 16 years in office, a Republican in Virginia who had referred to himself as the state's chief homophobe was defeated by Danica Roem, a transgender woman. So how amazing is that? But it really speaks to the importance of getting out there and voting, which is, I don't know if there's anything that I could do to affect change. It would be to just get people out to vote. It's just so crazy how few people vote in this country. It's so sad. But so did you guys do any, are you doing work in different states to try and help push these legislative measures forward, or?
Yeah, we have different things going right now. We're actively involved in North Carolina and South Carolina at different levels with bills there. And we also, again, work or sign on with other groups doing work in other southern states. It goes back to that three-legged stool of lived and legal equality that we work on at CSE of, one is the policies, another piece is community health care, and the third piece being our grant making. So a lot of times, like in Virginia, we actually do a lot of grant making to grassroots groups in that area who may be, be on the ground working for these policies and issues.
Yeah. And, let's talk about South Carolina a little bit. So, Ivy, and I haven't looked, what is going on in South Carolina as it relates to this? Is there any legislative agenda now to change things there? What's going on?
Well, so there have been in 2020, we've seen a lot of anti-trans athlete bills and medical bills introduced. Some of those states include where we've had the anti-trans medical bills, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, and more. But
what does that mean? What is that, an anti-trans medical bill? What does that mean?
Totally. So the one that we had introduced in South Carolina are very similar to the ones that we were seeing across the South, which would make it a felony potentially for medical providers to provide care to trans youth who are under the age of 18. So it's a particularly heinous attack against trans youth who are some of our most vulnerable folks in the community. So, I'm based in South Carolina. When we had that introduced in South Carolina, we started working with a coalition of organizations here who are coming together just to support trans youth. Since then, we also had an anti-trans athlete bill introduced. The good news is that on these medical bills, we haven't seen any of them pass. So they're all stalled out, which feels good and also feels clear to me that they're
why? Attack. Why are they stalled out? Why didn't they pass?
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems clear to me that they're unconstitutional, but I.
Does that matter? No, like, is there a Republican governor in South Carolina? Is there a Republican legislator?
Yes.
So why wouldn't they just say screw it and pass it?
So I think that there's several things. There's this, and these with the medical bills, it's not only bad for the trans community. It's definitely very bad for the trans community, but also medical providers don't want the government telling them how they're able to provide medicine. You don't want the government telling your medical provider how they're able to provide medicine. These folks are legislators. They didn't go to medical school. And so I think that there's a, it's easier to see for a lot of folks how this is wildly inappropriate.
Yeah.
And dangerous, especially in the midst of a pandemic.
It looks like Representative Stuart Jones is the one who proposed this bill.
Yeah, Jones did in South Carolina.
Yeah, yeah. So any statistics on, I know that when you look at the population as a whole and how they feel about these issues, that you, the percentage is really high. Most people are for anti-discrimination laws, but yet the legislators themselves seem to be bringing up the rear. And I wonder in South Carolina, if there was an amendment proposed statewide, I wonder what the result would be. I mean, do you have a sense of how people feel in the various communities in South Carolina in general?
You know, I don't think I could take a guess at, at how that would play out. But what I do know about the community here in South Carolina is the way that our organizations have come together to support trans youth really says a lot to me about how resilient our community is and how ready our community is to work together to make sure that we are moving towards justice and safer spaces for our folks here in South Carolina.
Yeah, I'm just amazed at what happened in Virginia. But of course, you know, they have a Democratic governor there, but it feels like in most of these other states in the South, we're just kind of in a holding pattern until the 2020 election to see. Boy, I tell you what, if anybody ever thought my vote doesn't matter, boy, I hope that they will revisit that in 2020 because it absolutely does. Go ahead,
Allison. Does, and I think what you were, something you just alluded to was what we talked about earlier. In North Carolina, we replaced a very conservative governor with a more progressive governor, and yet we had not been able to pass even a conversion therapy ban here. We got it introduced, but it hasn't passed. So it's not just the governor. You know, I can't stress that enough. Politics is boring and it's complicated, but it takes more than just the head seat for these things to get through. We have to have progressive legislators in all of the positions to start seeing the needle move like we did in Virginia.
Yeah, definitely. And those, for those of you that aren't aware of what Allison is referring to, this is called the Mental Health Protection Act. And it would ban the practice of conversion therapy. It's HB 516. And would designate conversion therapy as unprofessional conduct, and counselors, social workers, and other professionals practicing it could lose their license. Now, it's stalled in committee, I think, but Roy Cooper issued an executive order banning it, right, while he's in office. That's what I...
Well, yeah, he did issue an executive order banning any North Carolina state funds from going to fund conversion therapy, but he doesn't have the power to ban conversion therapy statewide, which is what the bill would do. And we did make it through the initial committee into the health committee, which is honestly, it's a big step for us. I mean, you know, just a few years ago, we had HB 142. So the fact that we can even get a bill passed, introduced into a committee to be debated is a big step for us, but it's still not where we want to finish.
Yeah, definitely, definitely not. All right, we're going to take a quick break for a second. For those of you that are just joining us, you are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, and we will be right back.
Woo, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City.
Fulton County announces COVID-19 Virtual Arts Initiative. The Fulton County Department of Arts and Culture announces its Virtual Arts Initiative, a competitive funding opportunity for Fulton County's individual artists and nonprofit arts organizations adversely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. The initiative provides financial and operational support to sustain the cultural infrastructure of the local economy through engaging creative entrepreneurs and organizations in presenting virtual arts programs and creative engagement opportunities for Fulton County residents and visitors. Eligible groups include nonprofit arts organizations and professional artists actively working in Fulton County. Individuals or organizations interested in applying should review the guidelines available at www.fultonarts.org. The application deadline is June 16th at 11:59 p.m. Applications submitted after the deadline will not be accepted. For more information and registration, the website is fultonarts.org or 404-612-5780. Funding for this program made possible by the Fulton County Board of Commissioners under the guidance of the Fulton County Arts Council. This has been another public service announcement brought to you by your listener-supported station for progressive information, WRFG 89.3 FM.
A little funky. That's actually Round and Round by Tevin Campbell, something I don't think no one has ever heard of except for me. You are listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG 89.3 FM, WRFG Atlanta, I should say. I'm your host, Greg Boston, and we are speaking with Ivy Hill and Allison Scott. Both are with the Campaign for Southern Equality, and that is an organization whose mission is to promote full LGBTQ equality across the South. And we just have a few minutes left, so a couple of things I just want to mention real quickly, because we are in Georgia here locally, that in February 2019, Senator Marty Harbin filed Bill 221, the religious liberty legislation, that would, and this is the sixth year they've tried to bring it back, and it would allow businesses to refuse to serve LGBTQ customers because based on their religious affiliation or their religious beliefs. But I think that's stuck right now. There was a similar act that our governor, Nathan Deal, vetoed in 2016. I wonder where we are with that. I guess everything's just kind of sitting there now with the state of Georgia. Is that correct, Allison?
Yeah, a lot of those bills, if they haven't been vetoed, are just sitting still in their committees and not moving. And that's through a lot of the work in groups like Georgia Equality and other grassroots movement leaders on the ground in Georgia to make sure that the damages of those bills are known so that legislators don't pass them.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder too, before we finish up, we had somebody from the Freedom for All Americans organization that started in 2015. We had the executive director of that organization, and I wondered if you did any work with them. They are specifically there just to fight to get these anti-discrimination bills in. I wonder if you do with any work with that organization.
We haven't done directly with them. We've dealt with National Center for Lesbian Rights, and a lot of the equality groups, South Carolina Equality, North Carolina Equality. We've dealt with a lot of those groups in each state to help on these different anti-trans or anti-LGBTQ bills that pop up from time to time.
And I wanted to touch on this before we end. And this is, I think, something unique to your organization, and that is your ability to offer grants to, I believe, is it other organizations that are doing this type of work? Could you speak a little bit about that?
Well, it's not only other organizations, it's even individuals. When COVID-19, we're really proud of that fact. We've been giving away grants for 5 years now, and typically we always work to give away 10% of our organizational budget because we believe that, you know, the systemic inequalities of our systems particularly keep people of color and LGBTQ people without the funds they need to bring about change. So we started giving out money in grant forms. And when COVID-19 hit, as a group, as an organization, all of us decided that we needed to restructure that and get the money to people, especially individuals who are hurting right now. So we started offering $100 grants to individuals who've been affected by COVID-19 in the LGBTQ community. And we prioritize people of color, trans, non-binary people, but anyone in the LGBTQ community is eligible for that. And that's become a significant piece of our work. We were on track to give out $89,000 this year. That was our typical goal over 11 months. We have blown through that. We've given out $120,000 in about 3 months' time. And we're getting ready to release another round in a couple, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks, that will release another $60,000. And we're going for $200,000 here in just a couple weeks. So it's a big victory, you know, for us internally, that we've been able to move most of that money to individuals.
And that money is coming from other individuals, I assume, that are donating and foundations and the like, correct? Yeah.
We've been very fortunate that some individuals have stepped up and said, you know, I'm doing okay, and the work y'all are doing has been really important, and I want to contribute to that. We've seen foundations step up and say, you know what, prioritizing getting money into our community's hands on the ground is a big deal, and y'all are doing it great. We want to contribute to that. So, yeah.
That's incredible. Well, I think we're going to have to end it there. I do want to give people a place to go where if they're interested in getting involved in the organization, either donating or as a volunteer, where they can go. So you could just kind of give us the website and we'll head it out from there.
Go to southernequality.org, and across the top, you'll find all of our different programs, how you can contribute financially, your time, or any other resources you need. And we would love to hear from everybody.
All right. Well, thank you so much to Allison Scott and Ivy Hill. Ivy, you were wonderful as well. You want to say goodbye to everybody, Ivy?
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for listening.
All right. Thank you so much. And that'll do it for Alternative Perspectives. We will see you next week. But until then, I don't know. As always, tell somebody you love them. Talk to you later.
Yeah.